You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
After a crushing defeat on Tuesday night that included a 19-point blown lead and a chance to go above 500 for the first time this season, the Pacers returned to action on Wednesday to take on the Washington Wizards. With Sabonis back to put up 13-7-7 and add to a very depleted Pacers center group that included Jakarr Sampson playing big minutes at the 5 on Tuesday, the Pacers were able to defeat the Washington Wizards 121-106. The game was much tighter than the score would show, as the Wizards knocked down a 20-plus third-quarter lead by the Pacers to just single digits with 10 minutes left. But in order not to repeat Tuesday night's debacle, Coach Nate McMillan put his best two players, Sabonis and Malcolm Brogdon, in the game to start the fourth. While Brogdon had a forgettable shooting night of 3 of 14 for just 12 points, his steadying presence on defense and 13 assists helped the Pacers keep the Wizards at arm length. It also didn't hurt that Aaron Holiday had his best game of the season with 18 points, including 3 of 5 from 3. T.J. Warren put together another solid game with 21 points on 60% shooting, and Jakarr Sampson, a fringe NBA player, put up his best season high of 14. The Wizards were led by two-time All-Star Bradley Beal, who had 30 points, former IU star Thomas Bryant, who scored 20, and former Pacer C.J. Malone off the bench with 15. To round out the Pacers, Goga scored 13, and Doug McDermott had 19-7. Welcome in to Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this wonderful podcast. On today's show, we will bring to you two different things: the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers' 121-106 win. And then finally, because we have enough stats after seven games, we'll talk about some of the big analytic numbers that are out there for the Pacers in terms of advanced stats. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You know, it's that time of year. It's getting cold. It's time for basketball. It's time for college basketball. It's time for football. It's time for college football. We're hitting every major sport except for baseball right now. And the best place, if you feel like betting, is to go to MyBookie.ag. Let's say you want to bet the Pacers, who play two more games this week against, I don't remember who, or you want to bet the Colts on Sunday when they play the Dolphins. I'm guessing they're 11-point favorites. Well, if you want to bet those games, the place to go is mybookie.ag. If you use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA, they will double your first deposit down. That's use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA and visit mybookie.ag today. You win, you play, you get paid. So the Pacers are riding this ship without Oladipo pretty well, I think. Really without Miles Turner and Sabonis last night. So basically through eight games, they had a two-game run where they're three of their best four players in play went 1-1, but they're 4-4 for starting 0-3. They don't look terrible. They don't look great. I'm not saying here they look like world beaters, but they look like a team that has pieces moving in the right direction. And once everything settles down, everybody's healthy and everything's figured out, this team has the potential to be pretty good. So I'm adding in tonight for the I've been doing the good and bad from these Pacer games. If you listen to this podcast after I've been doing kind of the solo shows after a few games the past couple weeks, but I'm adding in the ugly because I think it's time. I got some recommendations from people on the outside that really it should be the good, the bad, and the ugly. So the first good I would say is the Pacers assists. 35 assists on, I believe, 42 shots made. That is an incredible stat and really shows how a team who has brought in, I'm trying to think of how many new players. We're thinking if you add Holiday and Sumner as new kind of rotation guys, we're talking 8-9 players who've really never played together. We're really talking about a whole probably 12-man unit that has never really played together. And usually you would expect there to be a lot of isolation and trying to figure out what guys are going to be. But I think with the help of Malcolm Brogdon, really Sabonis, this team is able to move the ball around and whip it around and get the ball open to shooters and whatnot. I mean, a lot of this game, we saw Jakarr Sampson getting a lot of opportunities to take a lot of 15-20-foot threes, I would say. Not threes, twos. And he did a pretty good job. I mean, he's 0 for 3 from 3, but he's 7 of 9 from the rest of the field. And you saw a Pacers team that just felt more comfortable tonight. I know they almost blew this game late in the third quarter after taking a huge kind of lead. I think they led halftime by 8 and then went up as much as probably, 20-something. Hurt the third, but they felt like they had sort of figured it out offensively. I mean, you had another good night from T.J. Warren. Another good, I would say, was just the solid nights from Warren and really Doug McDermott, kind of the two. McDermott's maybe a little more shocking. His 19 points is probably better than they expect, but two guys with experience in the NBA who have to step up in a moment when this team, this Pacer team, is depleted without three guys from the rotation. I'm talking Sumner, Miles Turner, and Oladipo. Those two guys stepped up to have really solid games. McDermott kind of became the leader on the bench, and Warren was just kind of an offensive leader for the Pacers in general, taking the most shots and shooting, you know, the second highest field goal efficiency, or third, I guess, depending on, I forget what Jakar Sampson was as of 7 of 12. To go to a bad, I thought that blowing in the fourth quarter, blowing the lead significantly, was kind of another hold your breath, get kind of scared moment for the Pacers, because they've done this before many times, and it's kind of scary. I mean, after what happened on Tuesday, there definitely is a lot of concern that this bench unit is just garbage. And I don't really think that's true. I think what's really happening is they're depleted and they're having to play their bench guys as starters, which is hurting their bench unit, is having a trickle down effect and whatnot. Whatever it is, there's definitely a feeling like, oh, this bench unit just isn't good enough to carry this team. And really, if you look at it, the bench, I believe, probably had its best night. I think they scored almost 40 points, give or take. And they got to, actually, I think they got to 43, which is probably their best game of the season. You know, obviously, Holiday's really a bench guy, so Shadipo and Sampson's really a bench guy, but they started and whatnot. So there was some concern there that they would blow this lead, and they really almost did, but they were able to right the ship. They were able to get enough points out of Sabonis, enough points out of Holiday. Holiday really stepped up. That's kind of where the next good comes from, I think, is Aaron Holiday really kind of stepped into that role. He has really been, to be nice, not very good through his first six games. Or seven games, I guess. And tonight was the kind of the game where you're like, oh, this is what Holiday can do. Now, I think I would take Holiday shooting more 5 of 10 games, just consistency. It feels like he has one bad game and one good game, and I would, like, great game, where I would take more of Holiday shooting 5 of 10 and scoring 13 every night would be really solid. But for now, I think we're going to get a lot of these up and down Holiday games. It didn't hurt that he was playing a Wizards team. He doesn't play defense. Who started Isaiah Thomas as point guard, so he was going to have an advantage all night on the offensive end. But still, he did what you're supposed to do when you have that opportunity. He went 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3. I mean, he just had a good night. You know, we start to see more passing, I guess, out of him. But, I mean, he was really kind of playing two guard, not really playing point guard. And I think he can do that when you have a guy like Brogdon, who's so tall and big and can really kind of play the defensive small forward to shooting guard. I mean, Brogdon spent a lot of time guarding Beal. You know, Holiday had a little bit of Beal, a little bit of Isaiah Thomas on him at times. Frankly, it just sort of worked out, I think. You know, Holiday's a player who could play next to Brogdon because of Brogdon's size, where instead of having two underside players, you just have one on the court. And Holiday really plays better off the ball. I think that's pretty obvious. And he's just not a great creator. And that's where Brogdon, so I would like to say, Brogdon had a good and bad game, right? Well, I would say good and ugly game. So the good, he had 13 assists. He continues to be the steadying presence in terms of just keeping the ball flow, getting players good shots and good positions. I mean, most of the Pacers, you talk about Warren and Sampson, can credit their efficiency, even Holiday, with playing next to Brogdon, a guy who just knows where to make the right pass, how to make the right pass, where to find the players at the right moment. He does so many of the little things right when it comes to just, like, he sees the floor better than most guys. He knows how to dump off that pass at the right moment, get the ball to you at the right second where you can dunk the ball, put it in, or hits you right in the last stride with a perfect pass right in your hands. I think there was one play, I remember, TJ Warren, where he hit Warren just right in the hand in the corner and he drained the three. And it's like, it's the kind of thing where only kind of, you know, a few players make that kind of play. Brogdon probably can. Oladipo probably can, always healthy. But it takes a guy who just has that kind of calm and ease inside the lane to make that play. And Brogdon is one of a few players who has that ease where everything around him is swarming and two guys are trying to cut and cut him off and whatnot. He has the length, he knows he has the size, and the ability to just kick out that pass and make it really kind of perfect pass to set up a three. The ugly from Brogdon was he shot 3 of 14 and just was just not good tonight from the shooting-wise. He put up 12 points because he able to get to the line, which he's consistently able to do. I mean, I've been just impressed by Brogdon this year in general. I think he is by far sort of breaking the mold. I think, you know, when the Pacers signed him, there was this thought, well, are they overpaying for a guy who's really like, had the great life, like he's played next to a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo, who literally draws two defenders in and like becomes like the perfect guy to play next to because you get all kinds of third or fourth option opportunities, really, you know, because the defense is so focused on him. So, I mean, last year, right, Brogdon only got to the line about 2.4 times, which was a career high for him, and now he's getting to the line 5.6 times per game. I mean, he's making a leap that I think if you I still like the fact that he played with Giannis and Antetokounmpo. If you say, okay, just take that part out and say, this guy's in his fourth season, how do we project that, him hitting his kind of peak, which is, you know, NBA peak players is probably 28 to 32, 27 to 33 range. You would have projected this, right? He started the first year, he averaged 10, then 13, then 15, and he was kind of taking the same amount of, he was taking the same amount of shots between year two and three and putting up more points, so he was more efficient. So what happens if you get more opportunities, he should be able to succeed. But I think there was always the worry that he was sort of benefiting from Giannis, when in reality, I think it is he's a really good player. He's a very good NBA player who just knows how to make the right plays and is very calm under pressure. And that's why he's basically, I know he's not shooting fantastic from three this year right now. He's 32%. Frankly, he's had to take a lot of threes because he's in a lot of bad spots. When he gets, you know, I don't expect him to be a 5 point a game, 3 point shooter when Oladipo comes back. I expect him to hit kind of more the four number. But he's going to be taking better shots too. He's not going to be taking shots where he has to like shoot a 25 footer off the dribble or be kind of this in a shot clock guy. He's going to be a guy who's going to get like open threes from the corner because Oladipo's going to hit him in the pass or whatnot. But Brogdon just has something about him that's just like, this guy has like, in my opinion, has all-star potential written all over his face, has potential to be an all-NBA point guard someday. And there's just something it feels like brewing where when Vic comes back, you put the two together, they can be kind of like where Beal and Wall should be right now in the NBA. That's what it feels like to me. Maybe I'm jumping ahead too far. Maybe I'm getting too excited by the whole, maybe just eight games out of Brogdon. But it feels like, it really does feel like that Brogdon and Oladipo are waiting when they finally, their stars finally align, Oladipo becomes healthy, to be sort of the next great guard duo, at least in the East. I mean, they're not going to be Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Let's be real. Those guys are generational talents. But they're going to be, they could be Beal and Wall, I think, really, to be honest. I think they have that ability to be. Some more good and bad only from the game. Let's do this. The ugly, the fouls, they continue to be just terrible. So if we pull this up real fast, before tonight's game, the Pacers ranked, they were the fourth highest fouling team. That means they had the fourth most fouls, and they were, opponents were fouling them the sixth least. They had basically a minus six ratio of fouls taken versus fouls given, right? So that's how they let up like 42 free throws against the Hornets. Tonight, that didn't really change. It was a little better, ended up being more even, but they still had 25 fouls. The Pacers did the, now, luckily, the Wizards had 26, so they were better off, I guess. But in reality, 25 fouls is still a lot. That's right around the average they've had so far this year of 25.3. The fouls are getting bad. And this, it's a lot of it is undisciplined defense at times. It's maybe not knowing where to be. It's playing a lot of young guys, a lot of guys out of position. Now, luckily, I think it's fair to say Sabonis is playing back in his position now that he's playing center a little bit, but he still had six fouls. I mean, Goga had a lot of fouls, but Goga's going to have this because he's a young guy, doesn't really know where to be defensively, and centers get picked on for fouls all the time. You know, McDermott is going to be picked on as well. I mean, it's coming from the bench, really. I mean, you look at on the bench unit alone, they had 12 fouls for guys who really only one guy played more than 30 minutes. I mean, Goga is averaging a foul per 7 minutes. McConnell averaged one per 3 minutes. Those are not great ratios. Obviously, Bones is actually worse with one every 4.5 minutes. Actually, yeah, 4.5 minutes, give or take. We'll go four to 5 minutes. So the fouling is not great, but it's probably ugly from this game. But again, they won, able to make it up because they were able to get the same amount of fouls. They shot 21 of 26 for line, where even though the Wizards were perfect from the free throw line, they only took 19 attempts. So some positive once again, Jakar Sampson. This was a guy we weren't sure what to expect from him. He played really well in China. He showed some, like some spark, right? A kind of guy who, oh, this guy might be something. Like, we're not talking, you know, world-beating All-NBA, but a guy who could be your ninth guy on a rotation, eighth guy on a rotation. He had, obviously, that great kind of, like, four-game run with the Bulls last year where he put 20 a game. And, you know, he's only averaging 5 points to the Pacers right now. You know, that's not including tonight's game, so we should kind of take a grain of salt. But I thought tonight he really showed kind of his value, which is a high-energy player, guy who just kind of pumps your team up, and he shoots efficient. He shot a really efficient night now. I don't know if he can continue that, but an efficient enough night where it's like, yeah, we need to have him on the court. You know, him playing kind of that 3-4 model, really more 4, and I play a little 5 on Tuesday. I mean, that's kind of him. You know, I think that 3-4 spot is where he needs to be. I think that's kind of the right spot for him, but he feels like an NBA player to me, a guy who just can go out there, and maybe he's not going to probably put up 14. He's probably going to have more games where he puts up 7 or 8 in 5 or 6 rebounds per game, but just the kind of guy who adds a little bit of defense, and it's just kind of a in the right spots, not selfish, not really caring. He's just happy to be on playing and trying to contribute to a team kind of role. To me, it's kind of the Lance role without the baggage and history and obnoxious of Lance, is the fair way to put that. Other things from the game, I hit it a little bit. Doug McDermott was awesome. Sabonis' return, he didn't have a great shooting night, but it was just solid enough. I thought Gogo was solid off the bench. You know, another good night. I mean, Gogo's got some opportunities here to really play some big bench minutes now. And I think he's sort of showing a real potential. Now, I don't know what Goga's, his next level is per se. I think he's going to be a pretty decent NBA player, just like at minimum, because he seems to know how to score. He can make his free throws. He gets fouled, all that stuff. I think he has a lot to learn on D. And I think he's got to learn when he has the Magic. I mean, I feel a couple times he could take a couple more threes just because he was open and take them, and he seems to be an efficient three-point shooter. So, with him, it's just figuring it out. I wouldn't worry about it right now. There's going to be some ones where, he'll be in a better spot defensively. Why not take the shot there and whatnot? But he's young. He's figuring it out, and I think him playing minutes is helpful to him. But he's definitely more NBA-ready than any other rookie pitcher drafted the past two or three years. I mean, Leaf clearly wasn't. Holiday kind of was last year, but Gogo seemed like a guy where you put him in and let him play minutes in, it's at least average. It's not, you're not like, oh God, we play Gogo, we're going to get killed. It's like, okay, can he do enough to be a positive player on the court? And I thought tonight he pretty much did that. The last bad I had from tonight's game was Justin Holiday. He just didn't play well. It was just one of those nights. He went 1-for-8, 1-of-5 from 3 at 3 points. I mean, again, this Pacers team, I feel like they have a lot of NBA players. Now, they don't have, without Oladipo, without Turner, they don't have any of, I guess Brogdon can consider that, but they don't really have, the wow player, right? So, on one end, Turner provides just this wow defensive. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. He's maybe the best defensive, center outside Embiid and Gobert, that kind of thing. And then Oladipo has the other end, is just this wow offensive player and really this kind of wow two-way player. They don't have any of that wow factor guys. Brogdon, I think, a very good player, but he's not somebody who's Sports Center highlight wow. He's more he does all the little things right wow, but so good that it makes him an all-star, I think, at the end of the day. Very Chris Paulish, I think, for him almost in a way. But they don't have any of that wow factor, but they just have enough NBA players, guys who can play minutes and be positive contributors when they're on the court, that they're fine. I mean, McConnell's kind of the same way. He can just, McConnell's not great, and I don't even think he's a positive player most of the time. But he's good enough, and when you're playing bad teams like the Wizards, and really it should be the Hornets, when you play bad teams, these are guys that can be positive. And I think they're fortunate they don't have the toughest schedule to the first 11. Just projecting a little bit forward, I believe their Friday game, I'm pulling it up real fast so I don't get it wrong, is Detroit again. They should be able to win that one, to be honest. They play Orlando, and they play Oklahoma. Those are three games they should be able to win. Now, they probably won't win all three. They'll probably lose one, maybe in two of them, but if they can be at 5-5 and 6-5, whatever, I mean, the Pacers' whole goal, and I said this before, and last time I'll say this right now, is just remain 500 in Oladipo's absence, especially with Turner out, remain 500. And then when he returns, you should have a shot to go maybe, 43 wins. That's the goal. And they should be able to get to 43 wins. And that's a playoff team. I don't know what seed they're going to be. I think you just worry about the playoffs right now. This team's kind of projection is for next season, not this season. So if they're just a an seven frisky seven seed, that's not a bad, especially with Oladipo, it's nothing bad. I mean, I wouldn't knock the team down. The other guy I haven't mentioned yet is Jeremy Lamb, who did not play tonight. He's continuing to suffer from that hip injury. I don't know how serious it is. It seems like it kind of a come and go kind of injury. So apparently it's his ankle, actually, not his hip this time. Sorry, it was his hip to start the year. It's on that same side, though, so I wonder if it's kind of contributing to it. Sometimes you got one injury and you're putting a pressure on the other, whatever it is. I don't have any update on Lamb right now, but we will see a status for Friday's game, and I'm sure Tony will give you an update on that in tomorrow's podcast. All right, let's take one more break. On the other side, I'm going to go through some of the Pacers' first seven games, where they rank in some of the advanced stats. All right, welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. So, now that we are 7-8 games through, I would go through some of the advanced stats real fast. We're going to do it kind of quickly, just to kind of see where the Pacers stand. I think kind of enough sample size where they mean something, they don't mean everything, but they're just fun to look at too. So, overall, the Pacers' net rating is at about 1. middle of the pack, 15th ranked in the league. I think that's a fair feeling. I think if you were to ask anybody, this Pacers team feels like they're kind of good. They're kind of bad sometimes. They're very average. Doesn't mean they won't get better as the guys play more, as they get healthier, whatnot. But right now, the team that has played 7-8 games, because seven, I'm looking at a set that's counting 7 games, is very average. And I think it's a fair way to say it. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's not super exciting right now, but I think it's fair to say they're an average team, and that's okay. The other big stat that I kind of noticed was the amount of, so when it comes to amount of shots taken from three versus two, they're nearly taking 70, so taking the most in the league, they lead the league with 71% of their shots are being taken from two. That leads the league by far. They're leading the league in two-point field goals attempted at 66 and two-point field goals made at 33.1. They're shooting about 50% from two overall, which ranks really low at 27, and they're shooting 33% from three, which ranks 20th. They're 8 of 25 per game, basically, from three, which also ranked 26th and 30th. So there's nothing wrong with the Pacers taking many twos there are, except the fact that they're not efficient enough at them, right? So here's the problem. So they say take more threes because if you do 50% from three, it's worth the same as shooting 33% from three, right? That's sort of the stat, right? Well, 19 teams are shooting above 33% from three. So that means that you have to shoot above 50%, and for every 1% of three, it's 2% of normal. So, right, so you shoot 34%, you have to shoot 52%. 35 is 56, so on and so on and so on. 40%, you have to shoot 70%. I believe, I'm rough estimating this, but I believe that's kind of how it is. So the Pacers can take this many twos, but they have to shoot better than, they have to get to like 53 to 54% and be in probably the top five to be a competitive team. Or on the other end, they have to improve their 3-point attempts and percentage, because the last three in 3-point attempts per game. These stats are nothing new. Unexpectedly, no. The Pacers have consistently been one of the teams that takes the most twos per game and takes the least amount of threes. I mean, year after year, McMillan, you know, they say they want to shoot 30 threes a game, I think is what the goal was, but they just don't get to there. It's the way it is. And frankly, there is an inefficiency in the game where if you can just take the easy twos and make them at a high enough clip, you can make up for the fact that you don't shoot as many threes, because a lot of teams take a ton of threes and shoot garbage stats, so it doesn't matter. The key of the Pacers is finding the right balance. Now, I do think once they get healthier, they'll shoot more threes, because they'll bring in, they'll just have Turner who shoots more threes from that spot. Oladipo will just shoot more threes. I mean, it just will lead them to shooting probably more like 27, 28. The question is, will their percentage increase? Maybe. They could be at like 35 to 36 on 28 attempts. That's not terrible. You know, as they get better, their offensive rebounding should get better. So should get more attempts overall. But if they're going to shoot 66 twos a game, they need to have a top 10 percentage from two. And then it becomes like, okay, this team is worth it. Defensively, they are giving up, I think, the fourth most threes per game. Teams are not shooting. I mean, they're giving up the ninth highest two-point percentage, and I'm with 50%. But, you know, there isn't any defensive stat where it's like they're terrible. You know, turnovers, they have 17 points per game, which is pretty high. A lot of that has to do, you know, fouls we've already hit. They're only fouling opponents 19.6 times, which is the sixth lowest. I mean, defensively, they're okay. I mean, they have a positive turnover ratio, which means opponents are turning the ball more than the Pacers are turning it over, but the fouls are the opposite of that. I mean, none of the advanced defensive stats are anything, you know, super special, I think. Blocks, Pacers are fourth in the league in blocks, but that get higher turnover plays more. But, you know, I think offensively, the numbers that I always look at really are 3-point percentage, 3-point attempts, 2-point percentage, 2-point attempt for the Pacers, because that's kind of where we've always seen the sort of opposite of where the league is going, and it can work. It worked the past 2 years. They made the playoffs and won 48 games, even at the best player not playing, you know, 50 of those towards in the last 2 years. But they got to do better from two if they're going to show this, because, you know, frankly, it's why they rank middle of the pack as an overall team. It's why they rank, you know, I think 15th, and they're 19th in offensive rating and 13th defensive rating. It means that they're a middle of the pack team, because they're not efficient enough shooting wise, but that could change. We'll see what happens. You know, positive, the end is on a positive. I know last one's a negative note. They're third in free throw percentage. Malcolm Brogdon, thank you for that one, with 97% will carry this team. And frankly, all these stats are good signs, in my opinion, that the Pacers are holding afloat even without some of their best players being out. And we'll see what happens coming up the next week or two, who returns and who doesn't. That's all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. I know I started this podcast a little differently than normal. Please tweet at Locked On Pacers to let us know what you thought of that. I can do that for future podcasts. I cannot. If you didn't like it, I might try it out for the next week, see if I can do it a little better. Basically, what I did is I wrote the intro out and sort of just did something kind of summarize the game, because maybe you didn't watch the game. We don't care. We're open to anybody who listens to this podcast just wants to know about the Pacers. Feel free to listen. We welcome all comers to this kind of podcast. Let me know what you thought about the good, bad, and the ugly. Should that be a little more concise, whatnot? And if you'd like to see some other segments, you know, I'm open to a mailbag segment on every show if you guys want to send in questions and whatnot. But as always, you can follow us at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreeMadam5. You can follow my co-host, Tony East, at TEastMBA. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast, and we will see you guys again tomorrow.